Welcome into the PFN Bengals podcast. I am Dallas Robinson. Jay Morrison is on vacation this week, getting some much needed sun and refreshing downtime. So with that in mind, I am thrilled to bring in Brooke Pryor from ESPN, who covers the Steelers and all things NFL, does a wonderful job for ESPN. Brooke, I'm so happy to have you on today's show. How are you doing today?
I am great. I wish that I was getting sun and sand, but I mean, it's sunny outside my window right now, so I'll take that. And there's pollen, so that's kind of like sand, just a little bit of a different color. But, you know, other than that, I can't complain.
Other than that, we can't complain, right? Well, at some point this summer, both of us will hopefully get some sun and sand that Jay is getting. But for now, we're here to talk AFC North. So Brooke, as I said, does a wonderful job covering the AFC North and the Steelers for ESPN. I believe, Brooke, you're our first non-Pro Football Network affiliated guest on this show. I want to say so. We're honored to have you for that kind of title there. Let's start off as we kind of look at this division, which we were just saying was the most competitive division in the NFL last year. It looks like it's going to be right up there again going into 24. Ask CJ Stroud if we saw his comments on Bleacher Report's draft coverage that he thinks the AFC North is the strongest division in the NFL as well. Let's start with the Steelers, Brooke, the team that you cover so excellently for ESPN. What kind of questions do you have now that the Steelers have completed their offseason? They obviously in the draft, they revamped this offensive line, getting Troy Fontenot in the first round, center Zach Frazier in the second. It seems like that was the big kind of move the Steelers wanted to make in the draft. After getting Russell Wilson and Justin Fields in free agency, it's a total revamp of the offense in Pittsburgh with a new offensive coordinator and Arthur Smith. If you look at this team and this roster, what are your biggest questions for the Steelers now that free agency and the draft are complete?
Yeah, I mean, I think my biggest question is still on the offensive side and the one position that I feel like they addressed, but I don't know that they addressed enough, and that's the wide receiver group. I mean, I look at, they've got George Pickens as the established number one receiver after trading away Deontay Johnson. So who is the number two receiver in Pittsburgh? I mean, they've got Van Jefferson, signed him. They drafted Roman Wilson. And then they signed essentially any free agent wide receiver that played for Arthur Smith, either in Tennessee or Atlanta. So beyond that, I mean, I am interested to see how does that pecking order shake out? Do they have someone that is a strong enough number two receiver to distract defenses from, you know, completely blanketing George Pickens? Because right now, if I'm a defensive coordinator and I'm game planning for the Steelers, you can double George Pickens and there's not another receiver that I look at and say, well, I mean, you have to account for him. You know, we can't put all of our resources to taking George Pickens out of the game because they'll just exploit us over here. I mean, I think that the hope is that Roman Wilson will step up and be a big contributor early, that Van Jefferson will play well, and that Calvin Austin will take the year one to year two jump just in year two to three because he didn't see the field in year one after having the injury during training camp his rookie season. I think he has a lot of untapped potential, but this is a wide receiver room that I think is really top heavy and doesn't have a lot of depth. And, you know, maybe the Steelers are hoping to pull off a trade around the training camp time, maybe find a free agent. There's still a couple out there, but that market is rapidly drying up, and I don't know that they've addressed that position enough to feel good going into training camp.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some of the free agents that the Steelers were heavily linked to. Tyler Boyd, a former Bengal, but he signed elsewhere with the Titans. Zay Jones was out there, but he just signed with the Cardinals. So, I mean, you're looking at guys like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Michael Thomas, Hunter Renfrow. It's not the best group of free agents out there at this point, obviously. That I think it's a great call on the receivers, because even if you have hope for Roman Wilson, he's still a third round rookie, right? I mean, the expectations might be there, but to get a production from a third round rookie in year one is pretty rare. So you're really relying on George Pickens. And as you mentioned, kind of the Arthur Smith brigade that they've brought into Pittsburgh, right? It's kind of what they're relying on. It's like what the Panthers did with their defensive side of the ball, where they signed every free agent that Ezekiel Evero has ever coached, right? It's, yep. I get that approach. You like familiarity, but I think that's an excellent point. What about on the defensive side of the ball? Do we think cornerback is still a problem too? So the Steelers traded Deontay Johnson and got back Dante Jackson from the Panthers. from a name perspective, I think one of the most confusing situations in transactions. The Panthers traded for Deontay Johnson, traded Dante Jackson, and then went out and signed Dane Jackson. Like, can you get any more confusing than that from a name perspective?
You sure can. And I can tell you that I have to pause and think about, like, harder than any other name, who the name of the new Steelers cornerback, and so that I don't say Dante Johnson or Deontay Jackson. Like, it's Dante Jackson. And, you know, I think it's an interesting signing because also from a name perspective, he's not a big name corner that people know that they see. Wow, the Steelers got Dante Jackson. How exciting. Like, there's none of that kind of excitement purely from a name perspective. But in some conversations I've had with people on the Steelers staff, they've said, look, this is a guy that's really underrated, that has flown under the radar. He's been hampered by some injuries, but they think that he can step in, and if he's healthy, be a good pairing opposite of Joey Porter Jr. But I do feel kind of similarly with the cornerbacks that I do with the wide receivers, in that their number one is really talented, has a high ceiling. Beyond that, there's a drop off, and then there's a collection of guys that are good rotational players, but maybe not someone that should be an every down player that can really hold up their end of the bargain. I think that I am intrigued to see what Corey Trice Jr. does. He's someone who tore his ACL in training camp last year, has a very similar build to Joey Porter Jr. Mike Tomlin calls them avatar corners because they're just tall and lanky. And that body type worked out really well for Joey last year, right? So I think that if Corey Trice can, you know, kind of step into that role, maybe be another rotational guy with Dante Jackson. I know that they drafted Ryan Watts, who was a corner at Texas, but kind of has a build more to be a safety. We were talking about that at rookie minicamp, that unfortunately a lot of the college film you see on Ryan Watts is him getting toasted on the outside by opposing wide receivers. Not really what you want to see out of your sixth round draft pick, but the cupboard is a little bare in terms of other, I think, low or high floor, high ceiling type guys to be opposite. But, you know, the Steelers, I think, have had some success in looking for corners to sign in free agency in these late waves, or, you know, doing late trades, whatever it is. So they have to hope they can pull off something again to kind of fill that hole.
And the corner market's one where there are still guys out there. There's even guys the Steelers are familiar with, like Akello Witherspoon, Patrick Peterson are still out on there in the market. So there are options out there. Do we know who the Steelers nickelback would be if the season started today? Who's playing in the slot? I mean, is it Darius Rush? Like, is he the best?
Probably. Option? I'm trying to think. The cupboard is bare there also.
Yeah. It's there. Our lads has like Josiah Scott, Thomas Graham, like, admittedly, guys, I have barely
heard
of
those names before, which is not good. I mean,
it feels like that's an area they could maybe add to. And Chandon Sullivan's still out there, too. But I mean, there are reasons I think the Steelers moved on from some of these guys. But it feels like that's a spot where they can maybe address it as the summer progresses.
Well, and once they let Mike Hilton walk a couple years ago, they haven't been able to find a corner that has been as productive as Mike Hilton. And I think that that's been one of the biggest mistakes of this kind of last stretch of the Mike Tomlin years. And I know that was Kevin Colbert was still the GM in some of his last seasons. I think that that was a big mistake to let him go because they haven't been able to find someone that has been consistent. And just as Mike Hilton, as you guys know, great locker room guy, really solid defender, really versatile. If I'm, you know, a GM and I'm rewriting history and trying to kind of undo some of the biggest mistakes, that's my number one. I think I would do anything I could to re-sign him.
Last question on the Steelers for you. Now, this is a little bit of an older story at this point, maybe 2 weeks ago or so, but Jaylen Warren told Cameron Hayward's podcast that Justin Fields may be involved in the Steelers' kick return plans. Now, unless you've been under a rock, I'm sure everyone knows that the NFL has changed their kickoff rules. They're allowing for two returners. It's going to be a little bit different next season. Justin Fields as a kick returner, I'd personally love to see it. Brooke, is this something that's like realistic? Can we actually see this happen?
You know, when I watched that clip and I heard Jalen Warren say that, the first thing I said was, oh, bless his heart. He does not realize the news cycle that he has just unleashed. Because A, Danny Smith, the special teams coordinator, is the definition of just a Yinzer treasure. Like, this man is wild. He has broken teeth chewing gum. He got a concussion. I think it was last season when he got just demolished on the sideline and like all the guys are like rallying around and trying to pick him up and, you know, make sure he's okay. I mean, Danny Smith is very inventive. He will always, he's never going to say no to the possibility of something. And so I think that we will probably see Justin Fields returning kicks in training camp because they love a bit. I mean, last year it was Kendrick Green at fullback. Why not? You know, it's training camp is the time to kind of set off these red herring storylines. Like, oh, if you're chasing Justin Fields as kick returner, then maybe you don't notice that we've got a real situation brewing with the tackles. And is it going to be Dan Moore and Troy Fautanu and Broderick Jones? Who's the odd man out? But hey, everybody pay attention to Justin Fields returning kicks. I mean, from a physical talents and a body size and a speed perspective, yeah, Justin Fields makes a ton of sense, especially with the rules changing. But I don't care how safe they're trying to make kickoffs. The idea of putting your backup quarterback back there, it is unnecessary risk. And especially you've signed Cordarrelle Patterson. He is going to be your return guy. Maybe you try like a Jalen Warren back there. I think there are other options on this roster that I would explore to be one of those two kick returners before I put the backup quarterback out there, especially knowing how many quarterback injuries were happening last year. I mean, I think it was a record number of backup quarterbacks that ended up taking snaps, and the quarterback room does not have a lot of depth behind Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. It's Kyle Allen and then John Reese Plumley, who is a rookie that I think there were talks of maybe he could be tight end, maybe he could be a wide receiver. I don't think that you want to go from Russell Wilson to Kyle Allen when Justin Fields was an option, but unfortunately he got hurt on a kickoff return. So what are you going to do? But yeah, it would be fun. I'm not saying I would be mad if I saw it happen, but I would be a little bit confused and saying you are mortgaging a lot. You are leveraging a lot of your future back there just to see if you can get a good kick return.
Yeah, I mean, we'll take the storyline, right, if it's there. But like, I totally agree with you. I think there's a good chance Justin Fields is going to be starting maybe not a lot of games, but like a decent amount of games for the Steelers this year, depending on how Russell Wilson plays. So I think it's an unnecessary risk. It's a great way to put it, that it's as much fun as we might have with that idea, that it's probably a little bit too much at this point in time. Let's move on to the Ravens, the team that we just heard are going to be opening up the 2024 season against the Chiefs in a rematch of the AFC title game. Ravens, you know, one of the quieter teams of this offseason, I think. They lost a lot of pieces. Patrick Queen is gone. Geno Stone is gone. 60% of their offensive line is gone, right? Mike McDonald, their defensive coordinator, arguably the most impressive defensive coordinator in the NFL last year, has gone to become the Seahawks head coach. There's a lot of change happening here. They did bring in Derrick Henry. They re-signed Justin Madubuike along the front, you know, but they didn't add a lot to a team that lost a lot. So if you look at this roster, offense, defense, coaching, what stands out to you, Brooke, is like the biggest weakness on this Ravens team as they try and defend their AFC North title?
I think offensive line has to be one of their biggest weaknesses because you mentioned how much they lost from it. I think I'm also just most curious about how the offensive balance, what that looks like. They drafted Tez Walker in the fourth round. Is he going to be the answer to kind of filling the void of deep threats that the Ravens just didn't have last year? I want to see how quickly he's able to adjust to Lamar Jackson. I mean, going from Drake May to Lamar Jackson is a dream, I think, as a wide receiver to have played with both of those guys in back-to-back years. But is that going to be enough? I also am curious about the corners that they added in the draft. That was a priority. I know they got Nate Wiggins. Drawing a blank on the other guy they added. But are these young pieces going to be enough to supplement all of those names that you mentioned they lost? I mean, losing Patrick Queen is a significant piece. And I think also losing him to the Steelers, that was one of the, to me, one of the biggest moves of the offseason, or just back-to-back moves, was the Ravens signed Derrick Henry, the Steelers then add Patrick Queen. It was kind of a tit for tat that made me really excited about the AFC North to see that chess match happening even in the offseason. But are the Ravens, can they build around Lamar Jackson in a way that he is a Patrick Mahomes like player, where it doesn't matter how many things you subtract from him, he is the difference maker? To me, this is the season where the Ravens are really testing that. And like you mentioned, they're playing the Chiefs in week one. We're going to see that theory tested from the get-go.
Absolutely. And I think wide receiver is a great place to start, because Zay Flowers had an outstanding rookie year. I think we can kind of agree on that. But Rashad Bateman, Nelson Agholor, that's among the worst, like, two and three wide receivers in the league, I would think. Rashad Bateman, I mean, he had a weird situation with his fifth year option. He accepted a under the market kind of 2-year extension to stay in Baltimore. Nelson Agholor is back. You mentioned Tez Walker, but this is a group, I think, that could add another wide receiver if they wanted to. And we kind of already mentioned the options that are out there when talking about the Steelers, but I think that's a spot they could address. And you mentioned it too, the offensive line, especially on the interior, right? The Ravens used a second round pick on Roger Rosengarten, who looks like there'll be their opening day right tackle, but guard is a question. Andrew Voorhees was a seventh round pick last year, but he's coming off an injury. Ben Cleveland has never really been a starter. I think that's an area where they could maybe go out and sign somebody. You know, we've seen guys like Andres Pete and Lucas Patrick get signed in these recent days, but Dalton Risner is still out there for like the second year in a row, like somehow just still sitting on the free agent market. Connor Williams is out there recovering from an injury if they want to go after somebody like him. So there are options, but I think you're right. Like this, how this total offensive cohesion works, right? I mean, think back to that AFC championship game last year where the Ravens just failed to run the ball in any sort of capacity, and how that offense looked and kind of looked stifled. I'm not saying it's going to look like that every week, but you just kind of wonder what the natural progression is in this offense year two under Todd Monken, how these new pieces fit in, especially if you're worried about that offensive line. How does it all work? I mean, I think that's a great question.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, too, this is, I mean, the Ravens are a little hamstrung in the pieces that they could add because of the Lamar Jackson contract. And I can't remember what his cap hit is, but it's certainly more than when you have a rookie quarterback. And I think to me, this is just showing you have to be really certain about the quarterback that you're building your franchise around. And that's not to say that Lamar Jackson isn't worth the money, because he absolutely is. You know, he's an MVP guy. Mm-hmm. But I think, too, it just shows that your most successful way to build a team is what the Texans are doing. And they hit on a young quarterback early. They're able to spend all the money they want to kind of to support this young quarterback as best they can and position him, put him in a really great spot to do a lot of damage. And eventually, though, you're going to see it transition more to what the Ravens are dealing with and what the Chiefs are dealing with, and that, all right, we've dedicated a lot of our cap space to this quarterback that we believe is the difference maker and the way that we're going to win. But we've got to be really sure, because we're not going to be able to give him the best wide receivers, the best offensive line, and or at least we're not going to be able to give him the best free agents of those guys. So we've got to make sure that we can really hit on these guys in the draft, which the Chiefs did with Rashee Rice last year. But the Ravens have got to be better at drafting wide receivers and hope that Tez Walker is the guy that can be a dependable receiver, unlike, like you mentioned, Rashad Bateman and Nelson Agholor, that just didn't really pan out. And it's got to be frustrating to look at that and be like, oh my gosh, we've got a Ferrari in Lamar Jackson, but we're giving him like 87 unleaded fuel, and it's just not going to run as smooth as it would if we gave him the premium like he deserves. But we can't really afford that right now. Gas prices are out of control. So hope that you can make do with what we've got.
I will say I'm excited about Mark Andrews and how he can play like in a truly healthy year, right? And see how he kind of plays when he had that awful injury on that hit drop tackle and didn't come back to the playoffs. Like, I'm just curious to see how he can kind of evolve going into a healthy season. The Ravens also, I think, maybe the best team at adding players like in June, July, August, like last year. Kyle Van Noy, I don't think, signed till September. Clowney was a late signing. Even a guy like Arthur Millett, you know, who obviously Steelers fans know, was like a really good player who the Ravens didn't sign until like June, July. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens make a couple signings here that maybe fill in some of these gaps that we talked about as the weeks progress. Let's go to Cleveland. Cleveland, I think, it's one of the most fascinating teams to me because they just don't have a lot of roster holes, right? I think if you look at up and down this depth chart, there's just not a lot of areas that are true weaknesses unless you count quarterback, right? I mean, that's the one
anti-Raven.
Area.
Anti-Raven.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. So I think the questions you can have about this team, I don't really have any outside of what Deshaun Watson looks like, right? What does that look like? They signed Joe Flacco as a backup quarterback. Like, could he be, Jameis Winston. Joe Flacco is gone. Jameis Winston is in town. I think there's a good chance Jameis Winston starts a few games for the Browns this year, whether that's performance or injury related. So, we all know the contract situation. Deshaun Watson will be a Brown for at least the next two seasons, if not three. Whether he kind of look better, stay healthy, improve, play better in this Kevin Stefanski offense, to me, that's the biggest question going into next year.
Yeah, 100%. The Deshaun Watson trade signing has continued to just the farther out we get from it, the more obvious it becomes that this is one of the worst deals in NFL history. I mean, they have not gotten anything close to bang for their buck. It has created more headaches, more frustration. And I think if you're the Browns right now, you're looking at this going, oh my gosh, we've got such a good roster. I mean, we've got a guy that is perennially in the defensive player of the year conversation in Myles Garrett. We've got one of the best running backs in Nick Chubb. We've got, Amari Cooper. We've got receivers. We've got tight ends. We've got everything.
The two-time head coach of the year calling offense too. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, there is no reason why they shouldn't be not only contending for the AFC North division title, but to be, right up there in the AFC championship game, to be one of the best teams in the NFL. But it's like they can't seem to get out of their own way because of this Deshaun Watson contract. Mm-hmm. And I think that they had to, unfortunately, not re-sign Joe Flacco. I mean, obviously, he did not have a good end to his Cinderella Man stretch there in the playoffs. But I think that even without that, even if he, they still lost to the Texans and he maybe only threw one pick instead of however many he did throw, I still think that they couldn't have brought him back because of how awkward that quarterback room would have been this year, where Joe Flacco kind of won over Browns fans in a way that Deshaun Watson just hasn't or can't because of his really bad history. I mean, just all of the baggage that he brings with him in there. And not only does he have this off the field baggage, but he also hasn't played great. And Joe Flacco really came in and was embraced by the Browns fans, was having a lot of success. The vibes just would not have been good. And so the Browns in not re-signing Joe Flacco and bringing in Jameis Winston are once again kind of doubling down and saying, Deshaun Watson is our guy. We believe in him. But I agree with you. I think that we're going to see Jameis Winston out there at some point. I kind of think sooner rather than later, whether that's residual from Deshaun Watson's injuries last year, or if he comes out and he's just not playing well. Because I remember correctly, even when Deshaun was healthy, there was nothing that I saw from him that made me say, well, it's a good thing the Browns mortgaged their future and also, kind of gave away some of their ethics and morals, played fast and loose with bringing him in. He has not been worth any amount of the headache. And I think it's got to be frustrating to see that the guy that you've spent all this guaranteed money on is the thing that's holding your team back.
Yeah, he had one maybe good half last year, a half of a game last season that he looked even like an anything close to an NFL competent quarterback. So I'm right there with you. I did a ranking of all the NFL's GMs last week, and it's tough to know where to put Andrew Berry because I think he's done an outstanding job making this a good roster in terms of high end talent, in terms of depth, in terms of how they manage the salary cap, maybe better than any team besides the Eagles. But it's like, where do you put a guy who, like you said, kind of threw away their morals to go after a guy like Deshaun Watson? And then on top of that, give a contract that you can't get out of and to see Watson play like one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. You're absolutely right. It's one of the worst transactions in NFL history. And I think if the Browns fall apart this year, there's a decent chance that the Browns could just start over, I think, at coach. that's hard to say when Stefanski is coming off his second head coach of the year award here, and Drew Barry has done a good job overall. But if this falls apart, I think there's a chance they just start over and restart everything. I guess Deshaun Watson would still be on the team and the roster for at least another season. But there's a lot at stake, I think, for this Cleveland Browns team going into 2024.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also tough to be able to evaluate Andrew Berry as a GM without knowing exactly who was pushing what buttons and pushing what agenda behind the scenes, because you have to think ownership was probably a very big part of pushing to have Deshaun Watson in and make the trade happen and make this extension happen. That doesn't happen if the Haslams aren't signing off on it, if they're not saying we need to win no matter what, we don't care. I've met Andrew Berry a couple times, talked with both him and Stefanski, and it is just this really hard thing to square, where I think that they are both very good at their jobs, but like you said, there is this one thing, this but, and it is a very significant but, that it's hard to overlook that. I mean, do you end up going the Broncos route and say, all right, well, we're just going to eat all this money. It's better if we pay a guy to not be around. That's really hard to do, especially because odds are you're not going to have a very good draft pick, I would assume, because of all of the other pieces that you mentioned. I mean, what best case scenario, you maybe get a top 15 pick, maybe top 20, but I just think that they're not going to tank this season, right? I mean, even if Deshaun Watson is awful, this is not a team that, you know, you'd have to have catastrophic injuries across the board, which A, you never hope for, and B, I mean, the Chubb injury happened last year and they were still a wildly competitive football team, even with all of those things.
They were on their fourth and fifth offensive tackles last year and still were getting it done. Yeah.
Right. So, but I do think you're right that this is a very pivotal season for the Browns, for their leadership, for their front office, in a way that they both deserve and don't deserve. I mean, this is a Frankenstein moment. They created this monster, and now they've got to kind of see where it leads them if things don't work out like they hope.
The Browns really have insulated themselves with backup quarterbacks. I mean, not only Jameis Winston, but they brought over Tyler Huntley from the Ravens. They've still got Dorian Thompson Robinson, a former fifth round pick on the roster. So they've got options. If Deshaun Watson kind of collapses again, there are other choices on this roster. Let's finish up with the team that we usually talk about on this podcast, Brooke, which is the Cincinnati Bengals. So we think we've spent plenty of time already going over who the Bengals have added and drafted. Everyone who listens to the show knows kind of what the Bengals have done this offseason. If you look at this roster kind of as an outside perspective, what do you think the Bengals should do or might do this summer? Is there a spot on the roster that maybe you feel they haven't filled that they could maybe address going through this summer?
You know, when I look at the Bengals and the big questions that I have for this team, it's not so much the roster. The one thing that I think they should add is just a better wrist for Joe Burrow. I mean, that unfortunately, I don't think that that's on the free agent market or anywhere tangible. But my biggest question with this team is, how healthy is Joe Burrow and how realistic is it that he will still be the same quarterback this fall that he was even 2 years ago? Because we know last year there was the calf sprain and everything else that went along with it. But that wrist injury, I was reading some of the work that Ben Baby, our Bengals ESPN reporter, wrote last week after Joe Burrow's availability, talking about how there isn't another quarterback that has had this injury that he can go to and say, hey, what should I expect? What do I need to worry about? I mean, the fact that he's saying like it's O-linemen or guys that don't need the same mobility in their wrist. I mean, what is the grip strength going to be like? I know guys that he's worked out with have said, oh, we still feel the same velocity, all of those things. But that, of course, that's what you're going to say. You know, even if you don't really feel it, you're not going to say, oh, I mean, he still maybe needs to get 15 more miles an hour on. It doesn't feel quite the same. That is my biggest concern, because like the Ravens and like the Chiefs, like a lot of really good teams, this team will go as Joe Burrow goes. And if he can't get back to what he was, that is a really big concern with that wrist injury. So I'm not quite sure what the depth chart at quarterback behind Burrow looks like. I know there were time. They had to use a lot of different guys last year. But man, that is my biggest area of concern for this Bengals team.
It's a valid concern, I think, because every year of Joe Burrow's career, basically, he's dealt with some sort of injury, whether that's something minor or something major like it was last season. And yeah, reading a lot of that reporting and the stuff that Joe Burrow has talked about, it is concerning. Like, you can't say it's not concerning. And I think if he takes another big hit from an offensive or defensive, somebody falls on that wrist, it could be a problem. There's no question about that. I think the one thing I would say is that Jake Browning did play pretty well last year as a backup quarterback. And I think he gives the Bengals a chance if Joe Burrow goes down, but the Bengals' entire offense is constructed around Joe Burrow's strengths, what he likes to do, what he likes in receivers, what route combinations he likes. It's always tough when a guy like that goes down. So I think that's an excellent point. And I'm curious to see throughout the summer as we get into OTAs and training camp and how Joe Burrow not only responds on the field, but how he talks about this injury. Is it going to be that same language as we're getting into August? Is there still going to be that hint of concern? And if there is that hint of concern from him, I think that will probably filter down to the fan base as well. I think that's only natural. So I think that's a really good point that looking at Joe Burrow and just kind of getting his view on how he feels throughout the summer, I think will be critical.
Right. And I also think offensively, I'm not totally sold on the construction of the running back room as it looks right now. I know that Joe Mixon didn't have a great season last year, but when we talk about the concerns around Joe Burrow, a way to take some of the pressure off your quarterback is to have a really strong run game. Yeah. I don't know that Zach Moss and Chase Brown are going to be those guys. Maybe they can kind of get it going, but that is a major concern for me.
Yeah, I think Jay and I have talked about that. We were surprised the Bengals didn't draft a running back, at least on day three, somebody else to add to that room behind Moss and behind Brown. So I think that's an area they could consider a free agent. I think the one area that I still think that the Bengals could use an option at is cornerback, where they've got DJ Turner, they've got Tim Taylor Britt. We talked about Mike Hilton in the slot. Dax Hill is transitioning from safety to corner, but there's not a lot of depth there. And we mentioned some of these options that are out there. Stephon Gilmore, Steven Nelson, Jerry Jacobs. I don't think guys at this point in the calendar, especially if we get to July and these guys are still in the market, not going to be very expensive. You know, I'm thinking $2-4 million, maybe some incentives. I think if you're a team like the Bengals that's going for a Super Bowl, you want to have holes like that patched up. You don't want to be starting Dax Hill in his first year as a transition to corner. You don't want to be starting Josh Newton as a fifth round pick, a rookie at corner. You want to have someone who's experienced. So whether it's running back, corner, maybe interior offensive line, there's room for, I think, another 1 to 2 pieces on this roster throughout the summer. And I'd be surprised if the Bengals don't add somebody in the next couple of weeks.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about the holes that these teams have and the things that they need to patch up. I do feel like, you know, we talk about how competitive this entire division is. Mm-hmm. It does feel like every single team is all in for a Super Bowl. Every single one believes that they are one or two pieces away from a Super Bowl run. And some teams, you know, across the league, you look at, you're like, oh, okay, you're delusional. You know, every team's going to say the goal is the Super Bowl. Like the Raiders are saying that, but like their quarterback competition is between Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. And I simply don't believe that they're actually going to make a run. Right. Yeah. But I do think that there's an argument for every team in the AFC North to be competitive, to make a deep playoff run, if they can just address one or two things. And it's also interesting to me that a lot of them are similar positions, that they're all kind of fighting each other for. They're going to cannibalize each other, which is, I mean, the goal. You obviously want to build the best roster in the NFL, but most pressingly, you want to build the best roster within your own division because that's who you're going to face the most. But I mean, yeah, the Steelers and the Bengals have the same need in terms of cornerback. I think that we're talking about the wide receiver situation. Steelers and the Ravens each need wide receivers.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is kind of crazy when you look at it. I think that underscores just how tight this group of four teams is going to be when the season gets started. And it makes me that much more excited for the schedule release coming out in just a few days to know, okay, well, when are they all going to be playing each other? What is this competition going to look like as we get down to week 17 and 18? It's just, I'm getting hyped for it.
I am too. Like, it's a good point about like all these teams are truly all in. I mean, the only other division I think you could even say that about is maybe the NFC North, like that all those teams are truly competing. But even then, you've got a team in the Bears with a rookie quarterback. You know, it's this AFC North is a team full of veteran laden teams, I think, that have a lot on the line this season. And how this season plays out, I think, will have a lot of effects going into 2025, 26, how these teams construct their rosters going forward. So I think that's a really good point. Brooke, thank you so much for joining our show today. Really, really appreciate the time. Would love to have you back on some point in the future to talk Steelers, NFL, and anything about this division in general. Please tell people where they can find more of your great work on the Steelers and the NFL.
It is all on ESPN.com under our NFL tab. You can scroll through all of our NFL work, but mine is mostly under the Steelers tab. And then I'm on Twitter at BE Pryor. Thank you so much for having me and for letting me be your first non-PFN affiliated guest. I feel so honored.
Oh, we're honored to have you. Maybe we can get a t-shirt or something sent out to you for this, or a trophy or something like that.
I love
something
merch. Made up. Always absolutely. Here for merch.
Of course. Well, thank you so much, Brooke, for your time. Thanks to everyone for listening. Jay and I will be back next week once Jay gets back from sunny Florida and all his rock concerts and everything else he's doing. So we'll be back to talk more Bengals next week.